Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
All right, welcome everybody. The fantastic board, Here District. I'm the captain of this vessel. That's what they tell me. Our first mate, Chris Johnson. What's up, Chris? How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful, man. It's been a drama-filled day. Had some dental emergency issues.
Yikes. To
but, man, Wauwatosa. The miracle of Wauwatosa took place, and I was able to make it here on time. And I'm glad I did, man, because we are blessed and fortunate and grateful to have a guy that I really enjoy following and reading and just has terrific insight into the game of basketball, and man, should be a general manager one day, as a matter of fact, now that I think about it. Eric Name, senior writer for The Athletic, man. You've been covering the Bucks for how long now?
Total, I think like 10 years, but this will be year 8 at The Athletic.
Okay, all right. So, and we were talking before we came on air, that was right at the start of the...
Yeah, as soon as Bud came in, I came in.
So, but you were here.
I was here previously,
at the tail end,
yes.
Jason Kidd.
Yes.
So that leads us, that segues right into this next bit of conversation, because under Coach Bud, the Bucks never fell lower than, what, 8th or so in 3-point field goal attempts per game. Yeah. Last year, the Bucks were at the bottom of the bottom third of the league.
Yep.
But it was the fewest 3-pointers that they took per game since Jason Kidd's final year, when they shot about 25 threes a game. Yep. 25 threes a game. That seems...
Yeah, I can't imagine. not anymore.
Is that crazy how the game has evolved like it has, Chris? I mean,
that's low, right? That was low. 25 is low.
That's an all-time low. But so the 3-point shot, you had a great piece on what must the Bucks do to generate more threes. And first of all, so I'm old school, but I'm modern too, because I've been covering this team and covering the NBA. But there was a guy I was talking to about his problems, my lawyer, as a matter of fact. But he was talking about, he's a big basketball fan, 75 years old. Shout out to Gary Fishbein. But Gary was talking about how, I just can't believe how a team gets a steal, and it's a 2-on-1 fast break.
Yeah.
And instead of the guy going to the basket, he fans out to the 3-point. What's that all about? So I'm trying to explain the value of the 3-point shot. So just talk about that in terms of why it's important that this Milwaukee Bucks team generates more 3-point shots.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at finding offense in the NBA, it's about threes, right? And I think it's finding the right threes at times. And obviously, I think any coach you'll talk to, if you talk to Doc Rivers, it's let's get a paint touch and then get a three.
Yeah.
But I do think at the rate at which the league has added threes, you've gotten to the spot where, like, sometimes teams, they don't get in the paint. It is, let's get the ball up the floor as fast as you can. I mean, think back to that Pacers series. It's one pass, all of a sudden, oh, the threes, Nebhard shooting, Nesmith shooting. It can just happen like that. And I think what we've seen over the years is maybe we've reached the point where, like, teams aren't going to go up anymore. Maybe we've reached like the limit. The Celtics have pushed it.
What?
The Celtics have pushed it pretty far.
48 threes a game. Joe Mazzulla, yeah.
It's going to be tough to like take it to another level. But I do think to get to that level, you got to kind of maximize every area. Mm. And I think that's one thing where, you know, in Las Vegas, I was talking to John Horst about, you know, where they want to be next year, right? And that was already thinking about Giannis at point guard and surrounding him with shooters and doing all those things. And that's all very good. But they did that at the end of the year, and they shot fewer threes than they did when Dame was on the floor.
Yeah.
And to me, I think there's always limits here, unless you're very, you know, you're very purposeful. You're thinking about all the ways in which you can maximize it. And to me, one of the first things is, you know, we've talked over the years about the Bucks wanting to play at a faster pace. Every team wants to play at a faster pace. I'm sure every media day around the league, everyone's going to talk about, well, we got to play faster. That's like catnip for training camp. Like, oh, yeah, no, we're going to play faster. We're going to play faster. Everybody says that. But I think there's so many ways that you can do it. And yes, it is pushing the ball up the floor. But I do think one of the ways that a lot of teams create pace in the league is threes in the first 6 seconds of the shot clock.
Right.
That wasn't something the Bucks did a whole lot of last year. And part of that was Dame was walking the ball up the floor so that he could get into a half court set, or Giannis was walking it up the floor so he could get in the half court set. That to get up and, you know, to get a three up in 6 seconds, that means you got to be over in I don't know, by 22 on the clock? Yeah, like, you ready? It's a quick pace.
It's a team commitment to get run, those up. Fill the spots. And it's the whole. Giannis to get off the ball early enough to get those open looks. Yeah.
Correct. And the ball's got to move. Sorry to interrupt, but the ball's got to move. We got to move ahead, you know?
Yeah.
You need those kick ahead passes. And I mean, the whole league thinks they're going to be the Indiana Pacers this year. Like, that's the whole league has been talking about, like, oh, well, we got to be more like the Pacers. Well, it's something to strive for,
right. But
you're probably not going to be the Indiana Pacers. But what are some of the lessons you can learn? I think one of the lessons you can learn is, okay, let's do a kick ahead pass. And I think where that comes into play with the Bucks is the point forward Giannis experience is very exciting. Like, that's something that I think Giannis really likes. I think that's something the Bucks really like. But I do think part of being that point, whether you're a forward or a guard or whatever, is you got to throw the kick ahead pass. Think about how many times Tyrese Halliburton gets it out of his hands to then get it back. And while I know that might not sound all that attractive to Bucks fans, because it's like, well, just give Giannis the ball. He's the best. I mean, I think one of the more interesting plays that we saw a lot of last year, and the easiest points Giannis would score would be Dame brings it up on one side, gets into a pick and roll, and then all of a sudden Giannis is cutting on a 45.
Yeah.
Giannis is off the ball, and he's against a defense that isn't set up for him, that isn't waiting for him. He's already on the move. And some of his easiest points of the season to me were Dame in a pick and roll on one side, Giannis cut on the other. All of a sudden, Giannis catching on the move against a defense that isn't set up for him. Like, those are easy points. And for the Bucks to create those this year, it's about pace. It's about creating those other looks for other guys. That's, you know, Ryan Rollins starting to pick and roll over on this side. It's a dribble handoff with AJ Green or Gary Trent. Like, you have to think about those things. So to me, how the Bucks get to, you know, that upper level of 3-point stuff is it's got to be very purposeful. You have to be thinking about everything that we do on offense has to have a purpose. And maybe you can create some of that early offense. But ultimately, I think where it gets difficult is this is about Giannis. And if one of your highest usage players, and he's going to be one of the highest usage players in the league, if he doesn't shoot threes, there's probably a cap on how high he can go. So I think top 10 is a good thing for the Bucks to aim for.
Yeah.
I have some questions about whether or not they can get there, because I don't think this is a scene where you want Giannis shooting threes again. I think he's found a nice spot where that rhythm mid-range jumper is a good look for him. It allows him to feel the game. It allows him to feel comfortable, and you like that. But I know we've seen with Bud, he used to take five threes a game.
Well, and to that point, and I just bring it up because you brought it up, but I spoke with Vin Baker, and Vin told me, Vin spent dang near 3 months over in Greece working with Giannis, working with Drew Hanlon every single day, and he told me Giannis was shooting the crap out the ball. He's shooting the ball better than he's ever shot it. And the one thing that they focused on was not so much tinkering with technique. You know, if it's going in, Drew Hanlon, whatever you just did, keep doing it.
Right.
Whatever, you know, whatever's working for you, keep. And he was shooting. But then Vin also mentioned this, and this is what I want to talk about a little bit. It's just, he's shooting the ball well, shooting it great in the workouts. And then with the national team in Greece, he's playing more inside, playing more conventional big than he'll be playing in the NBA. And Vin doesn't think that that's going to impact his confidence, but it just seems like there's going to be an adjustment period for him in terms of that. But I would like to see him maybe at least come out of the shooting more threes, no pun intended, and just kind of see where it goes from there. If he's not knocking them down, if he's still down there around 30 or below, okay, let's put a halt to it. But if for some reason, and I just believe it, you know, a broken clock's right twice a day, this may be the year that he can shoot 33, 34. I mean, if he shot 34%, we would be happy, wouldn't we?
And I mean, even just from a numbers perspective, Giannis was great from the mid-range last year.
Yeah.
Undeniably one of the very best in the league. Giannis will tell you about it. I wrote about it when we were in Vegas, right? Like, you could see it early in the year that he was going to shoot it a lot better. With that being said, he still shot it at, I think, about 45%.
Yeah.
45.45 times 2 is 0.9.
Yeah.
30 times 0.3 is 0.9.
Here we
so
go.
All you got to do is shoot 30% on a three. Or, you know what I mean? Like,
that equates to what you were doing.
It's the exact
mid-range.
Same. Yeah. And again, that's a very easy shot, right? Like, from a, I guess there's going to be a lot asked of Giannis.
Right.
From a physical standpoint, him dribbling into a three, there cannot be anything easier on the planet, because no one's coming out anywhere near to him. He can line it up. He can test the wind. Like, he can do whatever he wants, because teams aren't going to come out there. And I think what you saw by the end of the year was he got so good from the mid-range that teams were starting to take an extra step. Right. That wasn't a wide open shot. At the start of the year, teams were like, oh, but you want to take a jumper? That's fine. All of a sudden, he's hitting 45, 46%. And then it's like, okay, well, now we got to come up here. And now he's got to work harder, right? Like, it's how do I get to this? Yeah, right. Is it a elbow and then a Dirk fade? Like, how do I still get to that shot? And it's great that he's knocking it down. But if we're talking about the ease and the physical ask of him on a night-to-night basis, it's going to be a lot.
Well, and Chris, I want to bring you in on this too, because you know, you're great in terms of teaching skills and teaching shooting and teaching it in the modern way the game is played today. That's one thing I respect about watching you work with the people you work with. But in terms of pull-up threes, the Bucks are not a very – now, Dame, one of the best in the league at pull-up threes last year. Steph Curry, Anthony Edwards, all these guys are great pull-up three-point shooters. The reason why Golden State and Minnesota all shoot almost 40 and above in terms of three-point attempts a game. You look at the Bucks roster, Chris, pull-up threes. Do we have anybody on there that you think might can do some damage from that area?
Well, Gary Trent Jr. was second on the team last year with about a 1.5 pull-up threes a game. I think this season, Kevin Porter Jr. is obviously going to be the prime candidate for guys that could really get it off the bounce and take some shots. You know, Cole Anthony, be interested to see what he would do. But back, I wanted to touch on, Eric, your point about the purposeful nature of how the Bucks are going to get to this top 10 three-point value. Well, you talked about it in the article. You mentioned the early clock threes, which starts with a Giannis kick ahead and then guys being open. But there's also the threes off screens. The Bucks only took 1.5 threes, 23rd in the league last year off screens. I feel like with Turner, Giannis now, and Giannis and both guys being such offensive threats, you're going to have to care about what they do. And so shooters will be a lot more open this year, I think. And then the other thing that you talked about that you touched on was the second chance threes. The Bucks had the lowest second rate in the league on second chance threes. So now if in training camp, Doc can sort of isolate these kind of, you know, points on offense. Hey, guys, these three topics is what we're going to focus on. And that speaks to the purposeful nature. I don't think it's something where Giannis has to come down and shoot a gang of threes next year. 30% would be great. 32% would be great. But I think it's more of that team approach, that strategic, purposeful approach by Rivers and staff to figure out the second chance and the off screens and the early clock. You know, establishing an offense within an offensive, kind of an offensive flow, a concept, if you will.
And I'll be interested with offensive rebounds. I'll end up writing something about it, I'm sure, in training camp. But if you look over like the past 10 years of Doc Rivers' offenses, last year the Bucks were last in the league in offensive rebound rate. Largely with veteran-led teams, Doc has decided we're punting on offensive rebounds. We're going to be great in transition defense. Get back. We need to set it up. I think that made a lot of sense when it was Brook Lopez, right? Like, if you have a guy like Brook, we know how hard and laborsome it could be at times for Brook to get up and down. So, okay, Brook, get all the way back there. Everybody else, we can't take any chances. This is for the first time in, I don't know, maybe the first time since I've been covering the team at The Athletic, there are young legs on this team.
Yes. A lot of them.
And that, to me, is going to be an interesting question, because largely, I think in the last 10 years, Doc Rivers' teams have been in 20 or lower in offensive rebound rate, I think 7 out of 10 seasons, so only 3 times. But there have been times when you had the Sixers team with Ben Simmons. He was letting them go crash the glass. Same thing with Embiid. I think the young Clippers team he had about 10 years ago, he let them crash the glass. So I'm fascinated. Like, those are the types of things where I'm talking about purpose, right? Like, what's the goal? What are we trying to do? And how do we best use our personnel? When you have an old team, don't go for offense rebound. Sure. What are they going to do? Fine. Okay, let's just get back on defense. But you got all these young legs out there. You got all those athletic guys. Like, it would be a crime if Jericho Sims is asked to sprint back on defense every possession. Like, he can go get them. He's got that athleticism. And I do think that's one of the things that I'll definitely be keeping an eye on during training camp and during the preseason, is where do you see those strategic changes? Yeah. Like, the personnel's different. You got a different group of guys out there. You got younger legs. Do you make some changes to the kind of tactics that you've had thus far for these first 2 years with Doc Rivers?
Well, and to that point, and I think it was Steve Kerr, I heard him a few months ago talk about, and it's, you know, Golden State and with their young Kuminga and then Moody and the young guys, mm-hmm. more so than the older vets, obviously. But when you attack the offensive glass consistently and persistently, now the defense has got to box you out. They get herded back toward the basket. I mean, that's a way to stop transition.
You ain't running.
You're not running. You're so worried. And if you're flooding 3-4, especially young leg guys who can give you some jukes and some change of directions up top, you can't get a piece of them. You try to get a piece of them. You got to work extra hard.
Exactly.
I mean, if that's your focus as a rebounder defensively, you're not so apt to get out in transition. You're not leaking out.
You can't run.
You know, you're not leaking out trying to get an advantage like Don Nelson used to teach us with the Bucks. You're trying to find a guy to put a body.
I mean, your butt's going to be on the bench.
Yeah.
If you leak out, all right. Yeah. Well, you gave up three offers. You're not playing
second,
the rest of the night.
And as you know, as we talked about, second with the Bucks, hopefully this year it'll translate into more three-point attempts. But second chance opportunities, you kick that thing out. That's the perfect time. That's found money to shoot a three-point shot. So that'll be fascinating to watch and see. But also, with the young legs, and this is something that when you look at the on court off court with the cleaning the glass, one of our favorite sites. I got to give a shout out to who's our guy that runs that.
Ben Falk
does an excellent job with that. But when you put together the triumvirate, as I call them, AJ, Gary Trent Jr., Kevin Porter Jr., and you throw Giannis in there, or you throw Bobby Portis and Giannis in there. I just looked at those numbers. The Bucks were forcing almost like 16.9, almost 17 turnovers a game. Oklahoma City led the league like 17.2 in terms of defensive turnover rate. And so if you get an increase in turnovers, just a little bit, the Bucks forced what, about 12 overall as a team. Yeah. And my point is this, Eric, it's not so far-fetched because I watched what Jeff Van Gundy, did with the Clippers this year. They weren't a great turnover team. He got there. Their focus was turnovers, and they become one of the best teams in the league in terms of just getting hands on balls, getting deflections. I think with these young legs, that's an area that Doc Rivers can look to tinker with, try and have a defense that maybe is a little bit more aggressive in terms of forcing turnovers.
You're reading my mind. In the same way that I was going to write about offensive rebounding, I think I was thinking about writing about turnovers.
Yeah.
In the last 10 years, Doc Rivers' defenses, I think, have only been in the top 10 in turnovers about three times. Mm. Similar years, right? Yeah. Those Sixers teams I was talking about with Ben Simmons, the young Clippers legs teams, those they did better in. And I think that to me is going to be interesting, right? Because I think there are certain things that Doc believes in, but I think Doc's also coached veteran teams for a long time.
He
hasn't been asked to coach a team with young legs. He's been asked, like, hey, you got a bunch of vets, try to win with the vets. And I think when he has that option, it's okay, let's limit our mistakes, let's not turn the ball over. We don't need to force any turnovers. We don't need the offense. Like, we can win this way. If we limit our mistakes, our veteran team can do this. And that's not the team he's going to have this year.
Yeah.
And I do think turnovers is a big part of it. Where can they finish in forcing turnovers and playing defense in a different way? Because previously it's been, you have Brook Lopez.
Right.
Control the rim, control the glass. Everything else.
No unnecessary gamble. Just play solid. Be solid. Right.
Yeah.
Contest shots. And Bud was big on that. Bud found other ways to gain an advantage in terms of stats-wise. But in terms of forcing turnovers, that was not his thing. And Doc's kind of similar.
And to Bud's credit, I mean, I remember writing about him when he first got here. Those Hawks teams forced a lot of turnovers. And why did they force a lot of turnovers? Because they had a bunch of wings and guys with young legs, and you have all of that. And I do think that'll be really interesting to watch this year because Miles Turner can do many of the same things that Brook Lopez did.
Yeah.
He can be the force at the rim. He can block shots. But I think the one thing when you watch Miles Turner is how well he can move around the floor.
How well he's
got the side to side, and he is still a center, he's still a 7-footer, but like he can do a little bit more of that side to side. So can you switch a little bit more? Can you get in passing lanes a little bit more? Can you just cause some general chaos that you couldn't previously? And all of a sudden, if you're doing that, then Miles can clean up block shots. He can clean up the rim. Same thing with Giannis. But if you get that triumvirate of guys you're talking about, Ryan Rollins as well, Cole Anthony as well, those are all guys that can really try to get after it on the perimeter. And if you're getting after on the perimeter, kind of everything can work together and coalesce in a way that I just don't think whether or not Doc wanted to previously, I don't think it was an option previously. Weren't going to ask Brook Lopez to execute those things because it wasn't going to work well.
Or Chris Middleton to get out there and get 100. Down and try and force. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you're trying to contain and be cautious, be conservative. Yeah.
And I do think when you look at this roster, there is, on both sides of the ball, I think there can be very purposeful tactics and strategy that you can put together that makes one big cohesive team, right? Like you can run more on offense, you can shoot more threes, you can force more, you can do all of those things with young legs that you couldn't do previously. And I do think it's going to be incumbent on Doc to really put it together and think about, I think, holistically how it works, both offensively and defensively, and then how all of those things can work together in concert.
Well, if body language means anything at all, I saw Doc yesterday, and you know, and I'm like, how you doing, man? I'm excited about
this. He had a pep in his step, MJ.
I am so excited about the man. There's so much potential and possibilities, and that's some of the things that we're talking about. Well, so, and one of the things I read, I forgot who wrote it, but they were talking, they were evaluating moves by different organizations, and they said that the Bucks with John Horst did as well as they could do with what they had to work with. Are you agreeing with that sentiment pretty much, or how do you?
I mean, when I'm trying to think back to what John said in Vegas, but he's like, you know, I did everything humanly possible.
Yeah.
Like we could not have worked harder to put together all of this. And I will say, like, obviously, I think if you look at the talent level of this team, it's going to be a little bit lower than it was previously. There's not like that second all-star that you do know, but that wasn't going to happen, right? You look at the Indiana Pacers, you look at the Boston Celtics, no one's complaining about them not having as much talent this year because they recognize if you have someone tear their Achilles or rip an ACL or whatever it is, and they're out for the season and it's one of your best players, you're not going to have as much talent. And John Horst, rather than being like, hey, you know, we can't do anything about it, Dame's going to be on the roster, he got creative and he found a way to kind of make a move. And I mean, at the start of the offseason, it was Miles Turner is going to be in Indianapolis, and he's going to get more money than anybody else on the free agent market.
He's coming back until, like, if at all.
And then all of a sudden, you have this surprise move where, once again, you make one of the biggest free agent splashes. So, yeah, I agree. I do think all of the – there's value signings as well. I think there's a number of those guys that – I thought we're going to get a bigger number this year that they managed to get back on a smaller number. And I think that speaks to maybe the opportunity that's here. Maybe it was a shorter deal. Maybe it was a 1-year deal, a 2-year deal. But I think a lot of those guys with those younger legs that we've been talking are like, okay, I can do some things here in Milwaukee. Like, I can put up some numbers this year because there's a lot of opportunity now that Dame – we got to find a way to fill that void that Dame had filled so capably for the last 2 years.
Well, I think I read we're at the KPJ and Gary Trent, and it's like 4 or 5 guys, like a total under $20 million. Yeah. Jericho, I mean, they were able to get them all back for under $20
million. That's crazy.
And a lot of those guys could have commanded something close to that per season in the right situation. Yep. So that's good stuff.
I had a question. Giannis. I had a question.
Go ahead, Chris.
Before you go to that, when you look at the last like three years of champions, so you had the Nuggets, you had the Thunder that won it last year. Those two teams, they didn't necessarily have cores that had a tremendous amount of championship experience. They had a talent fit there. There was, you know, and they had continuity. Now the Bucks lacked that continuity part. My question to you, Eric, where do you think this year's Bucks roster, with the combination of the youth and the veterans, where do you think they fall on sort of that spectrum? When you look at like the Thunder and last year and the Nuggets in 2023, could the Bucks go on a run? Could this thing come together with this current iteration of the team?
Yeah, I think one thing it's been a big thing in, let's say, nerd basketballdom, and I would identify as such. I'd say I'm a nerd. But one of the big things has been the popularization of an idea of the weak link theory, where previously it used to be if you had the best player on the floor, you're gonna win a playoff series, right? Okay. Undeniably. Like, for years and years and years, you had the best player, you're gonna win. Giannis was the best player on the floor in that Pacers series. Giannis was the best player on the floor in the Celtics series. Giannis was the best player on the floor whenever, right? Yeah. But the Bucks didn't have that underlying depth where you might have the weak link on the floor and that guy's getting taken advantage of. And I think one thing that Doc had kind of said during Miles Turner's, I believe, introductory press conference was, you know, one thing that we're seeing in the league is that you don't need to have the top heavy three stars, two stars. We're in a spot now where you have one great guy and then everyone else to be better, but you don't need that three-star approach. And I think that's one thing that we've seen the league go away from, where it's not a big three anymore. The team, for the most part, the teams that tried to build one, whether it was through the second apron or something else, they decided it didn't work, whatever it is, we've kind of gotten rid of that. And now you're more in that weak link theory where you got to have more of that depth. And if the Bucks are going to hit on an upside situation this year, it's because they're getting those kind of young leg contributions from guys 7 through 11 on the roster, where in previous years it was like, well, we got the big three. We can't spend as much money on these other guys. We can't put as many resources. We can't put as much player development towards these other guys. Like, we got to make sure the big three works out. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to be a pretty big difference this year, where they are going to need those contributions from 1 through 11. And I think they have a number of young guys that can actually step up into a role. Like, I think one of the things that I've seen this year is, oh, you know, what are they gonna do a point guard? And to me, it's very clear what they're gonna do a point guard. They have three guys that they're gonna try to play a point guard, and those are younger guys that are unproven. Right. Do I think they all have upside? Yeah, I think all three of those guys have considerable upside. Can I tell you exactly what they're gonna do? Can I tell you that what they did last year is gonna replace Damian Lillard? No, I can't. Mm-hmm. But I do think internally the Bucks believe that all those guys are gonna take another step.
Yeah.
They're gonna get more comfortable and they'll find a way through the group effort to kind of replace that production.
How much does continuity play? I'm thinking of Oklahoma City and Shea and Jalen Williams and Chet, and all these guys have been together 3 or 4 years. They've had the same coaching staff. This will be Doc's, what, third year or so coming up this year. Some you know, Kevin Porter Jr. was brought in last year late. I mean, Gary Trent is kind of new to the whole situation, just coming over. Do you think that factors into some challenges, let me put it that way, for the Bucks compared to Indiana Pacers with these guys, Nesmith and Halliburton and Turner and all these guys, Siakam coming in, but, you know, kind of hit the ground running there. You think it's going to be some type of adjustment challenge for this team?
I think it would have been more difficult if you didn't have those 14 games down the season without Dame. Okay. I think it was just a sneak peek. I understand. It was 3 weeks. Yeah. It was four weeks. Yeah. But like, they still played together, right? Yeah. Yeah. They still played this style.
Even
like,
more so together than
right. Like, and all those dudes that were playing during that time, they're all back.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like the guys that had the best lineup during the Pacers series.
Yeah.
They're all on the roster again this year. Yeah. And again, that isn't perfect, right? That's ultimately 18 games, 20 games, whatever it may be. So you didn't get the full experience, but it isn't starting from zero. Right. So I do think there will be, you know, they're not going to be as comfortable doing what they're starting this year. And if you make tactical changes and strategic changes, you're going to have that as well. So I don't think this is going to be a team that's going to have a ton of continuity, but I do think with the second apron, teams are going to have less and less continuity.
Yeah.
You really do have to change guys in and out. You can't just say, we're going to pay this guy and this guy.
Bringing everybody back.
We're going to keep doing it and we'll just pay the luxury tax. Yeah. No, like if you're up over the second apron, you're going to be in some real trouble.
Ask Porzingis and ask Drew.
They're playing in different places. Yeah. Like, so the Celtics won't have the same level of continuity.
Jason Tatum, hey, everybody get out of here.
Right. Like, house clean. You got to make all those calls. Like, the second apron's really serious and there's a lot of teams around the league that are scared of it. So the Bucks won't have amazing continuity, but they will at least have already had that sneak peek last year.
Well, and Chris, jump in on this too, but when I think about it, chemistry is such a big factor in terms of a winning group of players. And if Doc can find the right, if it's more forcing turnovers, if it's shooting early threes, first 6 seconds, whatever it is, this team may feed off of that, and that might make up for the difference of any kind of continuity issues you might have. So, I mean, chemistry like that, Chris, is huge, right?
No question about it. And I think that a big part of that is going to be kind of this training camp, developing that chemistry, Doc instilling belief in guys. Like it takes, like, to Eric's point about taking one guy, one star, and a bunch of good role players, it takes the role players to be stars within their role. So, like, if you can be Gary Trent Jr. can be empowered, AJ Green can feel empowered, Kevin Porter Jr., if we can empower these guys, and this is all on the coaches, right? If you can empower these guys, then they can start playing above their heads and then be locked in for an entire season because they're feeling good. And I think that starts in training camp.
And I was going to say one thing on that. Our guy at The Athletic, Dan Wojcicki, he covers the Lakers. He went to Poland, and he was talking to Luka about playing for Slovenia. And he talked to one of his teammates, and one of his teammates was like, you know, when Luka was younger, he didn't understand that we weren't on his level. Like, Slovenia is a tiny country. We're not as good as him. So if he'd throw a pass and we'd drop it, or we'd miss a shot, it would be theatrical, right? It was Luka rolling his eyes. It was, come on. He'd be yelling at him. Right. Like, again, that's fine. He was 22 at the time.
Right. Sure.
But, like, I think one of the things, like, the other side of what you mentioned, Chris, is that this, I think, will be a really big test for Giannis. And I think Giannis got some of that playing for Greece this summer, where those guys aren't, for the most part, NBA players. There's some very good EuroLeague players in there, like Slukas is a legend. Like, there's plenty of guys that have played a long time, but they're not NBA players. And I think part of Giannis being that leader was like, how do I bring them with me?
Yeah.
How do I bring you up to my level? And I think that was a good bit of practice for this season, where there are going to be younger guys and there are going to be mistakes. They are going to be missed shots. Right. Those things are going to happen. And I think maybe earlier in his career, if this would have needed to happen during the Bud years, there would have been some really frustrating nights. Giannis would have not handled it well, right? Like,
yeah.
I think he's developed into the spot now. We're going into year 13, where from a leadership perspective, from a maturity perspective, I think he's grown into a place where this feels like, how do I bring them along with me, rather than getting frustrated when KPJ drops a pass or has a turnover. Like, there'll still be some frustration, obviously, but, like, I do think he's at a level in a point in his career where he understands, these guys got to come with me, and if we're gonna have success this year, I got to bring them with me.
Yeah. So, and I'm laughing because, Chris, you may know this, but I there was a run at Crenshaw High School. This friend of mine, Julius West, would do when I was in the NBA, 25 years old, all-star, first team all-pro, but I was playing with musicians. And so I throw Philip Bailey a pass.
Who's Philip Bailey?
Earth, Wind, and Fire. Philip Bailey would drop a pass. I'm like, Philip, what's the reasons? I throw Marvin Gaye a pass. He'd drop it out of bounds. Marvin, what's going on?
Oh, my God.
Harvey Mason Sr., the great drummer. You know, come on, man. Get on rhythm, man. You know, but come on, Marvin, what's going on? Philip Bailey, reasons. Reasons you can't get your goddamn. But me and Julius laugh about that all the time.
That's hilarious.
So I can feel your pain, Giannis, in terms of frustration back in the day. But you're right, a perfect storm. I think he's in a different space. Giannis talked about it, man. And he had a great interview with Harris Stavros, one of the best basketball writers, the best basketball writer in Greece. And you talked.
Yeah,
you did a great thing in The Athletic, just kind of picking and choosing some of the really, really pearls out of that article. Giannis talked about being married and having a family, and at this stage of his life, there's a maturity and this experience with his brothers, and the winning a medal for the first time since 2009. They bring in the bronze medal. I just feel like Giannis, where he is right now. He also talked about, and this is what we want to talk about here, the criticism that he's received at times. And how at this stage of the game, he is able to use that as fuel. And just talk about Giannis and this whole, I wasn't big on the Eurobasket experience for him because it's so late in the summer. And I'm nervous, Nelly.
As you should be.
All of a sudden, Josh Hart goes down with a finger and Van Vliet goes out with an ACL. And then Tyler Hero's foot dizzy.
Yeah.
And Giannis is unscathed. So it worked out well. But I think the experience, looking back now, hindsight, was really, really good for him.
Yeah, I mean, it's always been tough for me to... Harris and I talked about this earlier in the summer, is that for Harris, it's always tough for him to try to explain to people just how much that means to Giannis and to anyone. And, you know, one thing Harris and I have always talked about is, I mean, I went to Greece in one of the warm-up games in, 22... I believe it was. So before that Eurobasket a few years ago. And they were at a warm-up game. And the ferocity of the fans from two different countries. Yeah. And again, like, you have to think, like, this is, like, NCAA March Madness, but these countries have fought wars against each other. Like, that,
it's personal.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not just like I like Michigan, you like Ohio State. Yeah, it's like my dad fought a war.
My dad died fighting your people. Right. Yeah, like 100%
in blood. Yeah, and you can't that you can't explain that to an American sensibility. Yeah, that's like, you can't. There's all of that. So you have that country pride that I mean, I think just builds up within you, and I think having that. Having the criticism of, you know, different Greek outlets that, you know, he's an immigrant from a different country, that whether or not he is a true Greek, like all of those things, he handled a lot. There was a lot thrown at him. There's, you know, there's newspaper articles. There's these political parties.
Yeah.
There's
Giannis
is this or that, or he's not a true Greek. Like all of that. Giannis had all of that thrown at him while also helping this basketball team do something that they haven't done since Vasilis Spanoulis, the head coach, won a medal in 2009. Like all of that, I think it's just so it's so heavy. And I think it's from a leadership perspective and from a maturity perspective, it's just something that no matter what you do in the summer, Giannis is an insane worker. He tries everything every single summer. He comes back. He's improved in some skill. That's the hallmark of his career, that year over year, Giannis is always better. That's all good. Giannis could have done that this summer, but then he did this. And I do think he'll improve this year. He'll be a better shooter, like Vin said, and he'll do all those things. But I do think the other part of it is he went through all this.
Right.
As a leader, he went through all of this. He felt all of that pressure. Yes. And I think to me, that's one of the big things is that if Greece was going to win, it was because of Giannis.
Yeah.
And that's, I'm not trying to offend anyone on the Greek national team or anything like that. It's just the basic facts of it. That was the only way that they were going to win. And that was what it was like nightly. And when you look at it in Milwaukee this year, and again, I'm not trying to offend any of the players on the Bucks team. If they're going to win, it's going to be because of Giannis. Mm-hmm. And I think all of that this summer goes a long way to getting you more comfortable with that on a night-to-night basis. And it's going to be tiring. Yeah. The NBA season's long. It's, what, 6 months long? Like, it's going to take a lot out of him. Yeah. But I do think it this summer has prepared him for that journey.
Well, and the fact – go ahead, Chris.
No, I just wanted to kind of follow up on that. Giannis, he talked about it when he said – he emphasized that being the best isn't just about stats. It's about being an example for teammates in behavior and leadership. Now, to some, that may sound like corny or cliche, but Giannis really breathes, lives that. He lives by that. He takes that like dead seriously, and he's going to do everything in his power to live up to that. So I think I feel like, you know, on the heels of this Eurobasket, he's going to come into this Bucks season with an increased sense of leadership. Like he's been empowered a little bit more, and with no Dame and him being the elder statesman, he's in the perfect position to kind of like employ all the stuff he learned this summer with this new Bucks crew.
Well, and so now I'm going to make it personal between the three of us right now, because we talk about challenges, being challenged, and then how do you, you know, how do you turn that into fuel to drive you to bigger and greater heights? So for me personally, a few instances come to mind. UCLA, you know, did a body transformation. Chris can relate to that from my freshman to my sophomore year. My old teammate and good buddy with the Milwaukee Bucks, Dave Myers, would call me Fat Boy all the time. and so that was I wanted to prove, and I didn't really register as using that as fuel until this subject was brought up. But then with the Clippers, Eric, you know, my first year, first training camp, first day, we're in a drill, 2-on-1. I'm playing defense against two offensive players. I reach in, I break my right hand. First day of training camp, the fifth metatarsal of my right hand. I'm done for the year in terms of being productive. I shoot the worst field goal percentage. Then the Clippers come out. I love this story. Chris and I and another good friend, Ed Waters, the coach at Crenshaw, we're walking in Westwood. And Chris says, Dad, can I have a quarter for a Herald Examiner? Remember Herald Examiner? He goes and gets a Herald Examiner newspaper. And then we're walking down the street in Westwood. And Chris says, Dad, what does rescind mean? I said, rescind means to give something back that you don't want. He's like, well, why are the Clippers trying to give you back to the Bucks?
Headline, Clippers look to rescind Johnson trade. drug treatment in 1983, which they were wrong. It was actually 1982. But so that came out. So all that stuff, my point is all that stuff came out, had the worst year of my life, averaged 16 points, which I never averaged that low ever. You know, almost always much better than that. 45% from the field because I had this broken hand.
Yes.
So that next year, you know, I was determined to come back and prove the naysayers wrong. This is a long roundabout way of getting to what we're talking about here. But so that next year, 1986 All-Star down in Dallas, 20 points a game. That was a Spud Webb slam dunk All-Star game. You remember that All-Star game, don't you, Chris?
Yeah, I was there. He was sitting with Dr. J's kids.
We were watching that courtside. But you know, for me as a professional, and we all three of us have reached the pinnacle of different stages of what we're doing. Was there a moment for you, and then Chris, you're next? Think about this for a minute. But Eric, for you, in terms of what you're doing, senior writer for The Athletic, covering the Bucks, NBA guy, a job that the people like who in your profession would just die for. Was there a moment that really propelled you to the next level in terms of people kind of doubting whether or not you had it in you to get it done?
I mean, I think for me, it's always been like, the thing I love most is basketball, right? Like, if I see you at a shoot around, I'm going to come over and we're going to talk about basketball. Like, anything else could be going on with the team. There could be this drama or that drama or whatever. But it was always, I'm always going to be focused on what's in between those lines. Yeah. Like, that's always going to be my thing. And early in my career, it was like, well, can you report at a level? Like, can you get the news? Can you do those other things? Like, can this nerd actually cover a team, right? Yeah. Like, or is he just going to write about the backside pick and roll every night? And being able to form those relationships was something that I had to work really hard for, where it was like, okay, can I have a conversation that's about something other than basketball? Yeah. Like, can I find those ways to connect with people and to connect with players and coaches in that way? And that's always, early in my career, that was always the question, was if I could do it or not. Obviously, we can talk about anything at this point, but early in my career, that was like, Marcus, can you tell me about a inverted pick and roll?
Let me follow up with this then, because this just sprang to mind. I mean, talk about cojones. San Giannis, after they lost a tough playoff series a couple of years ago, talking about failure. Remember that? Can you remember that conversation?
Yeah. I remember.
And Giannis' response. Did that impact your relationship with him? Was there any carryover with that? Do you sense any carryover? Is that bygones be bygones, and it's all good?
Yeah, I mean, that night.
well, set that up. Miami, who was that?
Yeah, that was the first round loss to Miami. I think most of us thought Mike Boonholzer was going to get fired in the next little while. Obviously, he did.
Yes.
But, you know, he had the issue, or his brother passed away. Yeah, so
tough, really, tough. Yeah.
And all of that went along with it. But I think all of that, you kind of knew was in the background. And I guess for me, that was a situation where, you know, obviously I have my job, Giannis has his job. I have a feeling what's going to occur in the next week with the team and the organization. And being able to answer that question is a big one, right? Like, was that a failure? Because if it was, then you might fire the coach. And that's what ended up happening. But the thing that, you know, was never going to be, and it kind of speaks to Giannis, was, he got off the podium and I met him at the door and I said, hey, like, we good? Yeah. How are we? And he dapped me up and he said, Eric, you're doing your job. I was doing mine. Like, we're good.
That's good to hear.
And I said, you're about to go to Greece for a while. So if we're not good, we need to talk about it. Like, we need to talk about it right now. And he said, Eric, this is your job.
Yeah.
I did mine. You did yours.
Yeah.
We're good. And we're to the spot where I think 2 years ago we were in Miami, and you know about locker room attendants, right? Like the guys that help out.
Sure.
Can you go get me some food? Can you do whatever? The locker room attendants were talking about somebody had said something crazy about Giannis on social media, like they do. So some one of the talking heads was he's overrated or whatever, and you know, the attendant was like, oh, you must hate that guy. And Giannis, you know how Giannis can be. He's like, oh, no, I blocked him on Twitter. You know, it's fine. And he was like, oh, well, what about Skip Bayless? I blocked him on Twitter. And he was like, what about that guy? And he was like, Giannis, like, well, who are you talking about? He's like, the guy that, you know, the Giannis is that guy. And he goes, Eric, oh, blocked him on Twitter. And he winks at me. And so we let him go on for a little bit. And then he was like, Eric, I blocked you on Twitter, right? And the guy turns white. God, and he was like, I didn't mean it. I didn't mean it. So
I didn't know it was you.
No, so we're in a good place. And then again, that speaks to Giannis and just how professional and graceful he is.
That's a great story. Dope. Chris, you're up, buddy.
No, just in general, you know, just the challenges of growing up in the shadows of someone that kind of laid it down in the same field that I was trying to achieve a career in. Basketball, like you talk about, Eric, growing up with a dad that's made it, achieved the highest levels, and then you try to follow his footsteps. It's tough. You get doubters. You get people that think you're there because of nepotism. You get people that think you're there because, you know, somehow magically your dad made a call and all of a sudden you got a scholarship to UCLA. What people didn't realize was all the work, all the blood, sweat and tears. And there's a whole human here that, you know, that was my dream, you know, basketball, playing the sport, getting to college, going pro, like those are things I dreamed of as a kid. So to have that kind of stuff sort of marginalized or you know, throughout my life always kind of served as fuel for me. That was my motivation. And just hearing the naysayers or the doubters, the people that were ignorant to my actual upbringing and my situation kind of have this sort of perception of me. It was fuel for me. And I can understand how a guy like Giannis could see these comments, can see the things that are said. You have to be built a certain way to turn those type of things into fuel for yourself. Some people can let that stuff kind of get to them and then they break under the pressure. Others kind of rise above, right? Eric, you're the same way. MJ, same thing. I'm cut from that cloth. You have to be cut from that cloth and just kind of be one of those people that doesn't care what people say. I'm going to continue to do what I do.
I was going to say one thing with Giannis is one of my favorite stories I've ever written about him was, I'm trying to think back. It was a couple of years ago. I had seen Sandro Mamukelishvili in Summer League, and we were talking about Greece and Georgia playing each other. And he was like, oh, I feel like Giannis kind of, you know, he's coming after me when we were about to play. Like, I was like, you know, I thought we were teammates, you know, it's an exhibition. And I was like, oh, no, he doesn't really get down like that. Giannis is going to go 100%. So that's what you're going to have to deal with. And then Mamu told me a story about how, you know, it was training camp. Giannis had taken the first couple of days off. And during that, you know, everyone's like, oh, when's Giannis going to get out there? When's Giannis going to get out there? Mamu hadn't played against him yet. So it's his rookie year. He hadn't played against him. And everybody in the locker room getting ready for training camp that day is, you know, having fun, talking, oh, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that. Or, you know, I shot the ball well. Yeah, I'm going to shoot it again today or whatever. And, you know, Mamu was just like, oh, Giannis, I'm gonna come after you today, or something like, just, you know, having fun, you know, trying to fit in. And he said, Giannis looked at him, shook his head, and went back to tying his shoes. Yeah. And he goes, oh, he's like, I didn't even say anything. I didn't curse at him. I just said, oh, you know, I'm gonna bring it today. And we got to a spot where when I asked Giannis about it 5 months, or I guess it would have been a full year later, I was like, Mamu told me this story, and he said, yeah, that was crazy. He was cussing at me. He said, I'm going to dunk on you. And all this stuff. And he was like, like, just wait. So that's what you think Mamu said? And he was like, no, I know Mamu said that. I said, no, Mamu didn't. And he was like, well, let's go find Mamu right now. Wow. So we walk all the way back to Mamu's locker. And he goes, Mamu, what'd you say? And Mamu's like, Eric, like, come on. And I was like, tell him what you said. And he was like, I just said, like, hey, like, I'm going to bring it at you today. But he said, no, you said you're going to dunk on me. So, like, Giannis used to be able to invent this stuff,
yes,
right? Like,
yes.
He could,
like,
invent it.
Like the great ones do.
Yes.
Know? He doesn't need to invent it anymore, right? Like, he can hear the things that, you know, the Greek media are saying. Or this year, he can hear what people are going to say about his team and what the Bucks can do and all those things.
He can't do,
He doesn't have to invent it this year. He can hear it and know people think they're going to be the sixth seed or they're not going to make the playoffs or whatever it may be. Like, he can hear all of that, and he doesn't have to invent it this year.
Right. And then finally, Giannis talked about his favorite archetype of player was what the two-way player, like an Anthony Davis guys that can get it done at both ends of the floor.
We're going to go around here and kind of poll this group here, me, you, and Chris, your favorite archetype of player. Now, one of our producers, Dylan Carter, talked about his favorite was like the George Mikan kind of back to the
the George Mikan.
The dinosaurs. I had to remind him that that's no longer prevalent in today's NBA. But no, but what's your favorite kind of model of NBA player?
I mean, I grew up as an off guard that played with a very talented point guard. I fancied myself as the point guard, but our point guard was better. So he played point guard, I played off guard. So I always connect with a guy like Andrew Nebhart that does everything, may feel like he has the capability to do a little bit more. If you put the ball in my hands, I can score, I can play make, I can do everything, but is comfortable, you know, filling in all the cracks. Yeah. So I always connect with guys like that because that was kind of what I was growing up. I thought I could do whatever else, but because I thought I could do all those things, I could fill in kind of
dirty work and do a little bit of everything.
Do all that.
And whatever is needed, kind of plug and play wherever you need me. Chris?
That's an interesting question because, you know, the archetype of player that is my favorite is different from my favorite player, but I like guys that aren't very defined or maybe a little heavy, but still very effective, like a Boris Diaw. Paul Pierce wasn't very defined, didn't have all the cuts, but will give you buckets till no end. So those kind of guys I always – because I was one of those guys. I was one of those guys that kind of got, you know, misjudged. You look at me like, oh, who's this guy? And then you look up, it's 35 and 15 on you. And so I always tried to emulate – guys that didn't necessarily look the part but had the production to kind of back it up.
Yeah. Now, for me, you would think it'd be like a, you know, a forward Julius Irvin type, but it wasn't. For me, my favorite type were the little point guards who were pass first guards. Lloyd Walton played at Marquette here in Milwaukee, played with the Bucks. When I'd get on a roll, especially my second year when I averaged 26 a game, he'd get on the floor with me, telling me to, you know, get some more Garvey. Get some more. He called me Marcus Garvey.
Get some more Garvey.
But he just keep pumping me up. Keep making me feel good. Robert Smith at Crenshaw High School.
That's dope.
He played with me on the Bucks too, Eric. We got a play I got to send you. It's a 2-on-1. It's a play we ran at Crenshaw. But here's my high school teammate, me, playing against Larry Bird and the Celtics. I'm running the right wing. He's coming down the left side. And I know exactly what he's going to do. He's got to throw the ball hard off the backboard, not shoot it, but throw it as a pass, make Bird think it's a shot, and I'm going to go up there and dunk it. He did exactly that. I went up to go and try and dunk it. Sidney Moncrief comes out of nowhere. We had to, like, battle each other for the basketball. I think I finally snatched it away from him and dunked it. But, like, man, this is our play, Sidney. This is our play. But those smart little heady point guards that surpass expectations and they're spark plugs. I guess that's the best term. I love that spark plug point guard. So that's what I love. But anyway, man, we thank you for coming by here, District. This has been fascinating, and we're gonna see much more of you. But fantastic voyage. I'm really looking forward. I mean, we got young legs.
Yeah.
Young legs for a change. Doc's got something to work with. I'm really looking forward to this season, man, and thank you for coming by and talking a bit about it. Eric Name, The Athletic. All right, welcome back here, District. Marcus Johnson, Chris Johnson, and I want to thank senior writer for The Athletic, Eric Name, did a great job. And, man, that was, Chris, that was some good conversation, good basketball conversation and life conversations. That's what I love about Eric. He kind of incorporates a little bit of everything into his interviews.
Name is an amazing storyteller, man. I love his work.
Yeah, that story about Mamuskelis, Vile, and Giannis. I mean, I hadn't heard that one. That was a classic. I thought I heard them all. But, Chris, if people want to hear stories like that plus more, how can they do so?
Well, they can subscribe to the official Milwaukee Bucks YouTube channel or follow us on Bucks Plus Audio on Twitter and Instagram. Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us there. Here District is in the building, baby.
And speaking of podcasts, this is our third edition of the PodFest.
Let's get it.
You're on Here District PodFest, Bucks PodFest. And we are honored to be joined by a couple of gentlemen that run a great site. I've been on there. I've been interviewed. I read it all the time. The Eurostep, Ty Windish and Rohan Kati. We thank you, gentlemen, for joining Here District.
Thank you so much for having us. We're thrilled to be a part of it.
Our absolute pleasure.
All right. So now we got, you know, some kind of stock questions that we asked you guys that spend so much time and energy. There's got to be a passion
not only for basketball, but for the Milwaukee Bucks specifically. And I'll start with you, Rohan. Talk about your passion for the game first, and then passion for this basketball team.
Yeah, it's something that's really, it came along a little later in life than I thought it would. Growing up, I wasn't really that much of a basketball fan. I was more of a football guy. And as I got older and I started to like go through school and stuff like that, I was like, no, this is the game I really like. I really love to play it. I really love to watch it. I love to consume all basketball content that I can. And it turned into me wanting to get better as a writer. So I started writing. It turned into me meeting Ty, him asking me to be on this podcast. It's been in just a journey of me growing up through the lens of basketball. And I really think I grew up with the Giannis Bucks, realistically. Like when I was just, you know, a few years into my basketball fandom, you know, this skinny little kid from Greece is like, oh, who is this guy? What's he going to turn into? And then as he grew up on the Bucks team, I started to grow up, go through college, all that fun stuff. And it felt like as they won a title in 2021, it's like, yeah, this is me growing up with this iteration of the Milwaukee Bucks. And it's because of that I really felt a personal connection with this team. It makes me so happy to be able to talk about it every week with one of my great friends.
Yeah, well, for me, you know, growing up, in terms of just man crushes, a boy crush, I guess, at that time, but it was Elgin Baylor, the Los Angeles Lakers. I go to the playground and I'm doing the head twitch like Elgin Baylor and everything, trying to hang in the air and spin it off the backboard from crazy angles like Elgin Baylor.
Well, what was the head twitch? What's the head twitch?
When Elgin would shoot a free throw, he'd get to the free throw line, he'd set himself, and then he'd do this right before he shot.
Okay.
Every single time, the head twitch, okay. The head twitch. Okay. Google it, the head twitch. But for you, Ty, Was there a head twitch moment? Was there like a man crush, boy crush moment? Some player in your past that you watched and said, man, I love this game.
It was also later in life, like Rohan, but my first favorite Buck was Brandon Knight. I really got into basketball in college as well. Kind of my household, you know, growing up, you watch what your dad watches. It was a lot of football and a lot of baseball at that time. Now we watch Bucks together and text about the team constantly, but I really got into it. I think it was the 14-15 year. And if you remember, Brandon Knight had multiple game winners, even though he was traded at the deadline. Should have been an all-star. I'll stand on it. Everyone who had his statistical benchmarks was an all-star that year, except him, snubbed Brandon Knight. But that was the early Giannis and Chris days when they were, you know, scrapping, I think a year or two into the league. And from there, just fell more and more in love with the game and then started to go back and research, you know, the Bucks teams of yonder to kind of make up for all the time I had missed growing up. And then, you know, now, of course, watching every game, looking back, reading about the history, all of that fun stuff, and fully immersed in the Milwaukee Bucks here.
Okay, guys, I'm having a senior moment here. What college did Brandon Knight play for?
Kentucky, right? Okay.
Was he a Calipari guy, right? Pre-Calipari? Or who was his coach at
Cal,
Kentucky?
Right?
Was he Cal?
He played for Cal.
Yeah.
He was good.
I thought he was destined for just greatness, you know, consistent greatness on the NBA level. So that's a good one. So and Rohan, I'll go back to you. You got anybody you watched growing up that all of a sudden you watched this guy? Also, I said Elgin Baylor, but Pistol Pete Maravich was another guy.
So wait, you told me Jerry West too when you were growing up.
Well, Jerry, I mean, it's Jerry West. I mean, Rick Barry, John Hamm. I can go down the list of guys.
So many.
But Pistol, with you know, he averaged 44 a game for 3 years every year in college, but the floppy socks and you know, the whole, you know, homework basketball passing.
Yeah.
But Rohan, who you like?
It's funny because I had a similar journey to Ty, where it's like, you know, I went back and tried to see who I missed in the times that I wasn't, and I even went back. And one player that I really, really loved from Bucks history, and I loved their game and watching them, it's Sid the Squid, man. Sidney Moncrief. Yeah. I like guys who can just lock in and just absolutely be a terror on the wing. It's some of my, like, I enjoyed so much on the defensive end of watching basketball. I love the little details of how every single player chooses to, you know, attack, whether at their footing or anyone's hand control or things like that in the context of a team defense. Like, that's the stuff that gets my brain going. So I loved watching old Sid highlights and just like whatever games I could find, I would watch those and try to study it and say, how can we apply those sort of concepts to the modern game? Obviously, a lot of things have changed.
Well, one of my favorite players to play with, Sidney Moncrief, so High on the Hogs, that great Sports Illustrated cover when he was at Arkansas.
Well, he has two hands like this behind his...
Oh, man. But the thing about Sidney, and you guys, you know, if you're nerdy enough, you want to check it out. But I know at least two or three games we played together, one for, against the Bulls for sure. But we're up one or down one, and he steals an inbound pass or steals an entry pass, guard to wing, and goes down and dunks at the buzzer to win the game. I mean, his flair for drama defensively was, for me, just fun to watch and be a part of and to play with. So that's a great choice. And Hall of Famer. Sidney Moncrief.
One more thing on Sid. When we had him on this very podcast, he told us one of the great stories of all time. I'm not going to spoil it. You got to go back and listen, but it is a legitimately amazing, unbelievable story.
What did it allude to? I'm drawing a blank. I've seen your moment again.
MJ, you don't remember he talked about when he went to the car dealership?
Oh, yeah. I thought you were talking basketball. You're talking
golf. One of the
golf.
Great stories. One of the great stories of all time. Go check out the pod with Sidney Moncrief.
He did a Scotty Scheffler impersonation. Okay, yeah. So moving right along here, I digress. But guys, talk about Miles Turner, and not just in the context of everybody talks about Miles Turner and how he's a younger version of Brook Lopez. He blocks shots. He shoots the three. All that good stuff. That's great. But what I've been impressed with just as much as anything is the way he's embraced this city, the city's culture, the Brewers, the Packers. You tweeted out, give me some restaurant recommendations. Sweet Diner, Chris. He mentioned Sweet Diner. Have you guys been to Sweet Diner? Sweet Diner
Absolutely.
Is like one of the absolute best places in America to go Wow. get breakfast. Especially
you never took me there.
Waffle,
you never took me there,
the bacon
MJ?
And the eggs over medium.
You never took me there. What's up, man? I've never been
Sweet
there
Diner.
With you.
No, we went to Sweet Diner.
We go to the North Side. Is it on the North Side?
You don't remember Sweet? We went to Sweet Diner. We went to Sweet Diner.
I must have forgot.
Yeah. We. I remember you sitting across from me at Sweet. Really, really eclectic kind of new.
I do remember. You're right.
Yeah, you've been to Sweet Diner, but guys, Miles Turner, in terms of I'm sure you've listened to him being interviewed. I mean, His I don't want to say his intelligence, because that sounds like, you know, like I don't want to say that, but he just has a way about him that I can really appreciate in terms of just outside of basketball personality that I think is going to be huge in terms of this team and chemistry and kind of how he fits in.
Yeah, I think there's some parallels on and off the court to Brook Lopez, right? Just kind of level-headed, kind of varied interests. I mean, something about the spacing centers where they just get into what they want to get into, whatever the perception of it is. It's so-called nerdy, which I'm not throwing that. I think Legos are great. I think Disney is great, too. But I love that he's embracing Milwaukee, right? Yeah. And I think it's you could say a layup to do that, but not everyone does. And I'm not throwing shade anywhere here, but it feels nice. You know, he's kind of in Milwaukee early, seeing the spots, interacting with fans, going to the Packer game. That stuff is all great. That said, I'm really excited for when we see it on the court, because I think despite the kind of fun loving, you know, happy go lucky, very congenial guy we're seeing right now with the Bucks fans, certainly someone who has something to prove, the way many over in Indiana are talking about him post-move. And I really can't wait to see the version of Miles Turner we get on the Bucks. The fit is great, but I think the player is almost being lost in the conversation of fit at this point.
Just building off that, I think he's really accustomed to the city because he's used to being a star, like a really good player in a small market. Like he's coming from a Midwestern city in Indiana, and just being able to come back and to Milwaukee and embrace the new city. But it's also like a little familiar to him. He doesn't have to, it's not like he's going to like LA or New York or anything like that. He's going to another smaller market in the NBA. He knows how to interact with the people. He knows how to, it's a comfort level, right? It's not as big of a change. change as it would be for moving from one city to another. And it's just really fun. I love to see people embracing Milwaukee. I try to say that Milwaukee is the greatest city on earth, and I try to do that through both, my personal and professional career. And it's just a lovely city that I love so, so much. I hold it near and dear to my heart. And just being able to see players embrace that on a big scale is amazing. It's more than I could ever ask for, and more than what I had thought was going to happen like 10 years ago.
No, I love the move too, man. I love to see guys that come to the city, wherever they go, and they get involved. They immerse themselves in the culture. They're attending games. They're eating the food. They're on social media. I mean, that signifies somebody that's not just there to get a check and fill a role. He's actually there to leave a mark. I think his mentality coming to Milwaukee is it's championship high level mentality. He's coming to leave a mark. And so all these kind of pre-festivities that he's engaging in are a precursor to, this season. He's going to be a fan favorite from jump. I mean, he's going to have the fans behind him. They're going to love him. I mean, how often, I don't know. This might not be the right question, but how often does a rival come to the team and then all of a sudden the fans, love you from the beginning? I don't know. Not very often in my experience, but I think Turner, he played it smart. He played it smart.
Yeah. And to your point, Chris, about Jerry West, I digress, but I used to mimic his jump shot form when I wanted to get locked in. That was my Jerry West form that led to my 26 points a game. Rounded up.
But that's a pretty big deal. Don't you think that's a pretty big deal? That's a pretty big deal.
See, guys, he likes to say, I average 25.6. He always says I average 25, but I always tell him,
I say 25.6.
No, you round up to 26, man. I love it. But speaking of embracing the city, Cole Anthony, Eric Name did a great piece in The Athletic on Cole Anthony. He talked about following the advice of his father, Greg, who played in Milwaukee at the tail end of Greg's 11-year career. We're going to get Greg on this podcast soon. I just contacted him a couple of days ago. But he told his son, the advice he gave his son was to get there in the summer so you can really appreciate everything there is to appreciate about Milwaukee. And Cole talked about, just the city surprising him in terms of all the things there are to do, the sights, the way it looks. And speaking of Cole Anthony, leads me into my next question. Which of the role players do you guys think, Cole Anthony, Jericho, Ryan Rollins, Andre Jackson Jr., he's on here too, Tyler Smith, Chris Livingston, AJ, I mean, going down the list, but which role player do you think has to have the biggest impact on this team for it to be successful? And who will that be? Go ahead,
Ty. I'll let you take this one.
I'll steal Rollins, and you can good luck with the rest of the list. I'm really excited about Ryan Rollins' season.
Okay.
And I think the whole point guard rotation is pretty fascinating. And I don't know exactly how it's going to play out. That's why Doc Rivers gets the big bucks. I look at the roster right now, and I think there's too many players to play them all, like too many real NBA, not just the young guys, players. And that you don't even get to like an Amir Coffey who's on a camp deal. I think that's a real rotation player too. So we'll see how that shakes out. But Rollins, I think some folks have pointed out the underlying metrics when you talk about his steal rate, his block rate. You look at his slash line for what he shot with the Bucks last year. Really elite numbers on offense and defense. And, you look at the per game averages on the whole, he averaged 6 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, which nothing to sneeze at, but doesn't necessarily jump out. In starts, those numbers all just about almost doubled for him. And I do think there's a lane here, now that Damian Lillard is out of the franchise, I think we all have our thoughts on who may start at point guard, but I don't know if that's determined yet. I think there's work to be done on that front in training camp, in preseason, everything else. I think Rollins has a shot to do it. And whether he's starting or not, I do think you look at this roster and the guys who can defend, guys who can space the floor, always have a role, but especially on this team where I think there's a lot of shooting, I think his perimeter defense is going to be really important. And I'm buying the stock on our Optimist pod. I just had him as all defense player.
So Ty,
I see you. We're on the same page when it comes to Ryan Rollins.
Ty, where are you at on Kevin Porter Jr. As far as lead guard? Where are you at with KPJ?
I think he's more likely to start than Rollins. I think he kind of was the incumbent player, and I think the pick and roll chemistry with Giannis was a really big deal. And I think you just look at, again, I don't like to default to just the numbers. Obviously, there's a lot more that goes into it, but this is a player who had a 19.5 rebound, 5 assist season as a full-time starter in Houston. Now, that Houston team didn't accomplish the goals that this Bucks team wants to accomplish, but that is proven production on the NBA level. And again, the same as I said for Rollins, right? Like, there's room for these point guards. Someone is going to grow into the points, the minutes, everything. I don't know who exactly it's going to be. Cole Anthony is another shout there, another proven point guard player. But I think he certainly has a shot to kind of get back to those numbers. And if you do that on a really good team, you know, there could be some league accolades coming for him too.
Yeah, I'm having a nightmarish flashback about that Houston experience. I think they had lost some kind of crazy double-digit number of games, and when he dropped 50 on the Bucks, and that was Kevin Porter Jr. Wow! But go ahead, and Rohan, and which bubble guy, fringe guy, edge guy in the rotation do you look to see to come out and just surprise some people with this level of contributions he can make to this team?
I think relative to the roster and the way it's constructed, I'm really interested in what Jericho Sims has to bring to this team. When you bring in a big free agent center like Miles Turner, your center rotation starts to shrink just a little bit because you have such a big guy you want to play so often. You're going to have those Giannis at the five lineup. Bobby Portis is going to be there. Maybe Kyle Kuzma is going to be playing a lot of four this year. Who knows what's going to happen? But you start to lose track of what a guy like Jericho Sims can do, who I've been a big, big fan of ever since he's, you know, joined this Bucks team. It's been such a small sample, considering, you know, he got hurt and it was only post-trade deadline. And even when he was in the rotation, it wasn't like big minutes or anything like that. But what I saw from him was just an ability to just be a game wrecker on defense, especially when he's paired with Giannis. Like, again, those sample sizes are so, so low. But in those minutes, they really dominated defensively. They weren't the greatest offensive lineup you've ever seen, but they weren't letting other teams score, that's for sure. Because you have a guy who's able to, you know, be a rim protector. He's also able to switch out on the perimeter. That's a guy that the Bucks could really use. They need defensive versatility if they want to get back to their identity of being a really defensive, heavy, focused team and sort of grind possessions down into the mud, which is what Giannis teams like to do on the defensive end. He could be a big part of that. Whatever happens, it's going to be a little tough for him. So whenever he gets an opportunity, he really needs to make the most out of it, because there are so many of those other players waiting in that front court rotation that if he is able to shine, that means things are humming for the Milwaukee Bucks. If Jericho Sims is able to be a proven production player for this team, it means things are going amazing for the Milwaukee Bucks.
Yeah, one of the things Chris and I talked about, I noticed that he was shooting a lot left-handed. So we'll see if there's some carryover to that this season. And so Rohan, I'm not going to ask you this. I think I already know where your sentiments lie. So I'll just ask this question to Ty. Favorite all-time Milwaukee Bucks? I know you like Sidney Moncrief. Ty, favorite all-time Milwaukee Buck? Sorry.
There was this forward Knight. In the 80s.
20.7 rebounds a game.
You said Brandon Knight already.
Four all-star appearances in 6 years.
Nobody talks about this guy. Terry Cummings, I always think, like, really goes under the radar when you talk about those 80s teams. No, I mean, my list certainly has, you know, yourself, Marcus, as I've said before and, you know, years back, made the case that let's get that number in the rafters. Let's get that bust in Springfield.
Appreciate that.
And still one is done, but let's get the other one done.
I appreciate you, man. You really, really would come to bat for me about that jersey getting retired. So I really appreciate you for doing that, man. Seriously. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you're good. You know, I think Kareem, it almost sounds basic, but just looking back at men, like, I think what he did, and it's easy to say, you know, Giannis is the greatest Buck. And I think for the time that he stayed here, it's fair to say that. But man, look back at some of those seasons and what Kareem was doing as a first-year player, a second-year player, and all the stuff he was going through off the court, which I think has also been kind of under-discussed in his reasoning for wanting to go to Los Angeles. I think a little different than what people think of now when a player maybe wants to go to Los Angeles. But also just accomplished so much and was such an amazing, great Buck, even in the shorter time he was in Milwaukee.
All right, final question, guys, and really appreciate having you on. But I want you to evaluate this Wisconsin sports summer. And kind of where does it rank? Do you think it's one of the greatest of all times? Can you think of any that have been better? Where would you rank in terms of what the Packers are doing, acquiring Micah Parsons, The Bucks and everything they've done, making themselves younger, entering into the modern era of basketball. The Brewers, despite the injuries, you know, having the best record in baseball and playing where they're playing. Where does this Wisconsin sports summer rank in your mind? And I'll let you go first, Rohan.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to top 2021 purely because of the Bucks title. Like that's one of the greatest summers I will hold near and dear to my heart forever.
Facts.
And but in terms of like all encompassing Wisconsin sports, it's tough to really beat this year. I mean, especially because of if you just consider the summer for the Bucks, like you don't want to say like, oh, lost in the first round again. But in terms of like, you know, you're able to sign a guy like Miles Turner, there's like a new shift in the direction of the franchise. And also with the Packers and the Brewers, these are all younger teams who are able to succeed. And I think it's a great summer on its own, but I think it's also going to set the precedent for great summers to come, because these are all teams that are going to be consistently good, if all things go well, according to plan, for a while. They're set up for success. So you could think of this summer, the summer of 2025, as a new dawn for Wisconsin sports, a new era of success for Wisconsin sports. So I would say, I'm gonna lean 2021, but in terms of like ushering in a new era, I mean, this is definitely up there. I'm trying to think of like any other ones that really come to mind. I mean, the years where, you know, the MVPs would just lie in Wisconsin, when you had Giannis, you had Yelich, you had Aaron Rodgers, and like it's like just continued dominance from all of the Wisconsin sports teams. It was that's like such a level of success that many, many places are never going to be able to get to. But yeah, I think it's definitely in the top five for sure.
Yeah, yeah, I like that perspective. Ty, where does this summer rank overall for you?
It's boring because we always do this on the show, but I agree with Rohan. I'm going to give 21 the edge just for the Bucks title. You know, if the Brewers get one, it can be tied for first as well. I'll throw in 2011, a great Brewers team, and the Packers were really gearing up to go and win a Super Bowl, but not as much on the Bucks side. And then Bucks only, a forgotten one. The amount of hype I had when they got Greg Monroe in 2015, you couldn't tell me anything about the Bucks. I thought, man, 50 wins, no problem.
Yeah.
We're going to the next level.
Yes,
Jabari
sir.
Parker, all NBA. I was so excited.
That's
and
a good one.
They got there in a roundabout way down the line. But that summer, I might have been my peak for Bucks optimism, to be honest with you.
I mean, never has the style of play affected a guy so drastically as Greg Monroe. You know what I'm saying? I mean, just in terms of becoming a dinosaur almost overnight, back to the basket
guy. During his rookie contract.
Oh, it's crazy. Geez. I remember writing an article, and I think Ty was the one who edited it, and crazy enough, where I remember thinking once they signed Greg Monroe, it's like, oh my God, are the Bucks a LeBron ankle tweak away from the finals? Like, is that where we're starting to get to? And it's there's no spacing in this lineup whatsoever. It's into something
else. Steph Curry ruined it for us.
But then you get Greg Monroe in that Eric Bledsoe trade, which turns into Drew Holiday, which turns into his idol.
Yeah. Well, listen, guys, good stuff. We appreciate you. Thanks for joining us here on Here District at Bucks Podfest. It's Eurostep. Check them out. Ty Windisch, Rohan Kati. Thanks for spending some time with us.
Thank you so much for having us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, guys. All right, Here District. We'll be back next week with more good stuff. Chuck Barris used to like to say on the Gong Show.